we're big on firsts as a species, you know, who landed in America first, who got to the moon first, that sort of thing. For a long time, we believed the Clovis people of the Southwest were the first people on the North American continent. But then there are those caves in Lake County, South Central Oregon, with evidence of human habitation that predates the Clovis people. The caves are now on a list of the country's most important historic and archaeological sites. Today's guests might say it's about time. They are all quite familiar with the Paisley Five Mile Point Caves. Stan McDonald is the state archaeologist, the Oregon State Office of the Federal Bureau of Land Management, BLM. Stan, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you for having me.
Kyle Janssen is here as well from Oregon Heritage. Welcome, Kyle.
Good morning, Jeff.
And we were hoping to get Dennis Jenkins to chime in, too, from the University of Oregon. Have you arrived, Dennis?
Yes, I have.
All right. Director of the University of Oregon Archaeology Field School. Welcome to all three of you. Dennis, give us the basic thumbnail sketch here. How long have the caves been studied, and what are the major finds?
Well, the caves were originally studied in 1938 and 39 by Luther Cressman of the University of Oregon. Yeah, he was doing some of the earliest archaeology in Oregon at that point. He went to the caves in the summer of 1937, saw the tremendous potential of the site to address Pleistocene human occupations in the Northern Great Basin, and went back the following summer, and then 1939, and for a very few days in 1940. Since that time, he has published, he published a number of papers. Some people accepted the caves. Others just, thought basically he hadn't proven his case. We returned in 2002 and began new excavations there just to see if indeed he had proven that there were human beings in the Paisley Caves at the end of the Ice Age.
So was the 2002 mission the first time researchers had returned there since what, 1940?
Yes. It had, people had been digging in the caves probably as early as 1928 or 29, and they continued to dig after Cressman left there. And so I think the feeling among most archaeologists was that the entire site had been destroyed by this unauthorized digging, and so people just left it alone. I walked into the caves in 2001 and looked around and knew that I could find undisturbed deposits there.
What did you see when you walked in? I think when people hear about caves, they think, oh, there were drawings on the walls and things, but it sounds like it's a bit more subtle and a lot more complicated than that.
Yes, there were very few artifacts on the surface. It really surprised me because in an area where obsidian is so prevalent, there were almost no flakes of obsidian laying around on the ground. There was burnt bone evident. The site looked like a battlefield. People had been digging for artifacts, and so there were just mounds of dirt and rocks and garbage laying around. And yet, at the same time, I saw subtle hints that they hadn't gotten it all, and so that's the reason why we went back to test.
There was much more stuff to be found for sure. Stan McDonald from the BLM, give us some idea of where these caves are and how many of them and how big.
Well, these are one of several cave sites that we know about on BLM land and in southeast Oregon. These are located near the community of Paisley. Hence the name for Paisley Caves. Within Oregon, BLM, we have probably 20,000 documented archaeological sites. I don't know the total number of cave sites, but we do have a number of cave sites that are located in southeast Oregon.
And are they open to the public?
Well, in many cases they are, because we have public lands that are open for visitation. In some cases, we may have some sites that we have put protective fencing around, that we put under more careful watch. But yes, much of the public lands are open for visitation.
And Kyle Janssen from Oregon Heritage, give us some idea about the recent recognition and what that's about and what it means for the Paisley Caves.
Well, what it means for the Paisley Caves is that They now have even greater public visibility and public understanding of the importance of archaeology, and especially the importance of archaeology in Oregon, that even though land out there today may look dry and full of sagebrush and no rain and barren, that it can hold clues to our human past that could be important for us in the years to come.
Dennis Jenkins, the director of the University of Oregon Archaeology Field School, so what were the major bits of evidence that humans did live in the area?
Luther Cressman had found Pleistocene animal remains, bones, in these caves, and so he actually found what appears to be a small house floor with horse and camel and bison bones around the outside of the house ring inside of cave number 3. So there was no doubt that there were ice age deposits of the right age. The question was whether or not people were ever there at the time that those animals were still roaming in the area. And so some people said, well, you know, somehow or another those bones got in there by carnivores, you know, such as lions or cougars or wolves or such, dragging those animals in there and eating them, and that the people really had nothing to do with them. And so they had asked for maps of the artifacts and the bones and some, you know, closer examination of the stratigraphy. Luther Cressman never provided that, and I don't believe he could provide it, or he would have. So anyhow, we went back to study that very same problem. We dug very carefully and got, you know, to extreme depth, and indeed did find more camel and horse bones and very few artifacts, nothing that would be diagnostic that would tell us who these people were exactly or the technology they were using. But we recovered at that time coprolites, which are dried feces. And in this case, that didn't seem like it was going to help much until Eske Vilerslav from Copenhagen, Denmark, found ancient human DNA in some of these coprolites. And so that has been the key evidence that has projected Paisley Caves forward in international archaeology circles.
We are, in fact, talking about the Paisley Caves and their recognition recently on a national list of historic heritage sites. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Dennis Jenkins from the University of Oregon, Stan McDonald from the BLM, and Kyle Janssen from Oregon Heritage. Phone number here on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760, or email us at jx@jeffnet.org. Was it believed that the coprolites were some other animal droppings before the DNA find?
Not before, but that has been proposed since by Gary Haynes at the University of Reno. He suggested that perhaps what we had there were non-human coprolites that were indeed pre-Clovis in age, and that the DNA had somehow or another been moved down, perhaps by water or direct urination, something like that, moving DNA of human character into non-human coprolites. Obviously, we cannot radiocarbon date DNA because it's too small. So what we are doing are radiocarbon dating hairs or bone or fibers of some kind that we can identify in those. And so it seemed like a feasible thing or proposal hypothesis, and we tested that and published in Science in 2012 our tests, which, you know, provided almost no support for movement of DNA through the deposits.
So you mentioned houses earlier, Dennis, which would indicate people lived in houses. So were the caves just sort of an auxiliary sort of place where they either went to the bathroom or stored things or something?
Yeah, they've probably done all of those things. It looks like occupation began about 14,500 years ago in the caves, and that's the same time that other animals began to move in there. And I say that because our radiocarbon dates come down to a certain level and stop over and over. We've dated in three of the caves extensively, and dates very seldom go back beyond about 14,700 years. So it looks as if there was, you know, something controlling when people moved into the caves and when other animals, you know, such as lions or whatever, began to move into the caves and use them as well. We think that's the time that sand and other materials developed enough in the caves that that it was attractive to animal occupation.
Stan McDonald, I have to believe if these are on BLM land now, they've been on BLM land for probably many decades. And Dennis already described the situation where there was trash in there and stuff. So was there much management of the area or maintenance or upkeep or anything like that?
Well, there's. I think one of the things that Dennis pointed out was, is that, you know, he noted that, you know, there had been looting that actually had occurred probably starting in the 1920s, and then it had continued on even after Luther Cressman was there. And I think Dennis points out a really, you know, this is a significant problem for management of archaeological resources on public lands. And, you know, we one thing we do with BLM, we have law enforcement that keeps a watch on several of our sites. We have archaeology, we have district archaeologists that have sites on a regular monitoring program. And a lot of times we get information from just the public that they may see something going on out at an archaeological site that just doesn't look right. You know, you see people maybe out there with shovels and screens, and you know, and then we may get a tip on some of those activities. But it is a problem, and it's one that, you know, when you think about trying to manage archaeological resources spread across some 13, 14 million acres of public lands in Oregon, it's a pretty daunting task. But it's one that, you know, we take very seriously. We do investigate activity, you know, illegal activities, and we rely on the public to give us to help be our eyes and ears out there sometimes to be able to give us information. But it's one that's, I think, that is a significant problem. But it's projects like these and radio shows like these that get information out about the importance of these places. And hopefully, you know, one of the things we try to do is we try to reach out to the public. We try to do education programs with school groups to educate folks on the importance of these places and what they mean to not only archaeologists and scientists, but what they mean to the Native American communities and what they mean to the public as a whole. Because when we start to understand how important these places are and what they mean to the human occupation of the New World, they are incredibly important for us in, you know, enhancing our appreciation of just where we've come from and who we are today.
So, Stan, what would you say to the people who say, well, hey, that sounds cool, let's go to Paisley and check out the caves? What's the proper approach for a person who is not as well-versed in how to approach a site as Dennis Jenkins is?
Well, I think one of the things that we always ask folks is that, you know, there are places that you can go visit. You can see archaeological sites that are open for visitation. There are historic sites that you can go to visit. We have lots of museums to go see some of the collections that have resulted from the archaeological excavations, and the University of Oregon's Museum of Natural and Cultural History is our primary museum facility that we curate artifacts from archaeological excavations. So there's lots of opportunities out there. There's also opportunities to get involved with university field schools, with volunteer archaeology projects.
All right. So, but don't make it a freelance kind of thing.
Yeah, right, right. And we ask, you know, like some of our best tips, I think, you know, for the folks, if we see something illegal happening, come from the public. But, you know, we ask people to try, you know, understand how important these places are and to treat them with respect. You know, it's okay to pick up an artifact, look at it, marvel over it, but we ask, you know, people just put it back in its place, because that's just a piece of the puzzle that we're trying to unravel. And
All right. Kyle Janssen, I have to believe at Oregon Heritage, then you're looking at obviously not just BLM land, but all public and private land in the state of Oregon. Is it a bit of an ongoing struggle to try to maintain heritage sites around the state?
Absolutely. Oregon's a big state, and there's a lot of empty spaces out there that look empty right now, but at one time they had human civilization there. And Dennis Griffin, who is the state archaeologist, is in frequent contact with the Oregon State Police and county sheriff's departments to solve or prevent looting from taking place.
Couple more minutes here to talk about the Paisley case with Dennis Jenkins, Stan McDonald, and Kyle Janssen. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 54, whoops, don't want to give that number anymore. Got into my old pattern. 800-838-3760, our lone phone number now. Email us at jx@jeffnet.org. So, Dennis Jenkins, is there still some argument about whether or not this is the oldest place identified where there was human habitation, or is it pretty well settled now?
Well, you know, at last count in 2012, about 43% of all professional archaeologists had accepted Paisley Caves outright. There was another 20% that were hadn't made any decision at all, and the rest were pretty much on the fence. And then there were maybe 10% that had rejected it for some reason. I think the biggest concern that professional archaeologists have is that this this earliest component does not have an awful lot of artifacts in it. So while we have the remains there, we have coprolites there with human DNA in them, I don't think anybody's going to argue that that isn't the case. The question is, well, where did the DNA come from, you know, and if people indeed are, you know, using the caves as latrines, why are they doing that? You know, why aren't they leaving artifacts behind? And so they would really prefer that there had was a much larger assemblage of artifacts with the human poop. So basically, there is nothing I can do about that. There is nothing anyone can do about that. The question is, do you believe the evidence that has been presented? And I've written multiple chapters in important books at this stage laying out the evidence for that. I came out with a chapter in 2013 in Paleo-American Origins, which is a book available through the Center for the Study of First Americans. And I think it's just a bludgeon of data indicating, no, we don't just have poop. We indeed do have artifacts. They may not be what you would like to see, fancy spearheads and things like that. But indeed, they are verifiable as artifacts, and they are the same age. So I feel like the case is well made. It's not ideal, but there is some argument continuing on. I don't know how much of an argument it is, but other evidence is being presented, and we are continuing to do research into such things as coprostanol, which has been purported to identify human feces versus animal feces. And so there is continuing research and debate about the Paisley Caves.
Any indication of what the ecosystem was like back then? I mean, it's high desert now, but what was it then?
Well, the caves are just a phenomenal record of human interaction with the ecology of the region. And what's really super important about these deposits is that we have 230 radiocarbon dates to this point that allow us to know that the deposits are accumulating at a rate of about 60 years per 1 centimeter of deposit accumulation. Well, if we can do the analysis that needs to be done with pollens and phytoliths and animal and insect studies and such, we could potentially reconstruct what the environment was like at a 60-year interval. And that's just incredible. Currently, researchers about paleoclimate and environment can get something down to 500 years, they're excited. So that just gives you an idea. These caves are just incredibly important, and the deposits that remain there are incredibly important. It was probably, if you were standing in the cave looking out over the Summer Lake Basin, you would see grasses, probably much more grass than there is there today. There would still have been sagebrush. We have evidence that ponderosa pine grew right at the site during some period, about 11 to 12,000 years ago. They may have been there earlier than that. And you would probably look at a mosaic. Rather than a forest, it would have been patches of trees, junipers and such, in some places.
Wow, so a real wealth of information, despite perhaps a lack of artifacts, but lots to be said about what's going on at the Paisley Cave. Dennis Jenkins is the director of the University of Oregon Archaeology Field School. Stan McDonald is the state archaeologist for the BLM in Oregon, and Kyle Janssen's with Oregon Heritage. Gentlemen, thank you all for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.